This is the eighth introductory lecture to the 19 letters, and I would like now to begin examining the 19 letters themselves. So how did the 19 letters come about? So as we pointed out, German Orthodoxy was a mess, and Rav Hirsch felt compelled to write a book called Chorev. And inside this book, he explains all the mitzvahs that are applicable today, and he gives rationales for them, and why we do them, etc., and some of the details, and we discussed this already. And we'll see as we start the 19 letters that Rav Hirsch felt strongly that mitzvos was a place to begin fighting the reform. And Rav Hirsch, he wrote this book in order to be kind of like a textbook for teachers and for students to use, because there really wasn't anything that could show you that was written in the language how to do mitzvahs, how to perform them. And when this book came to the publishers, he was concerned that it was a large manuscript and that it wouldn't sell and that he would lose money. So he suggested to Rav Hirsch that he should write a smaller book, which would be less of a financial risk. And if the book would sell, then he would publish Chorev. Now, Rav Hirsch, he wanted Chorev to be published in one book, due to problems that resulted from the division of the Shulchan Aruch. And while I'm not sure if the original book of Chorev, when it was sold in one edition or in two editions, it's interesting that the edition that was sold by Cincino Press for years was in two separate volumes, which I always found a little bit ironic. But anyway, I would like to quote for you a letter that Rav Hirsch wrote to his cousin, where he decries the fact that the Shulchan Aruch was divided into four different parts. You can find this letter in the introduction to Chorev by Diane Grunfeld. And the title is from Samson Raphael Hirsch to his friend Z.H. May in Hamburg, setting out his plan for the Chorev. And in the middle of the first paragraph, he writes to his cousin as follows. He said, "I should like to see the Chorev appear in one volume so that what is one in concept should also appear as one in expression. For the dividing up of our duties into various components has done great harm in the minds of people. One could write a whole treatise on the damage which has been done and is still being done by the fact that the Shulchan Aruch did not appear from the very beginning in one volume. That is how it came about that many a person has thought and still thinks that he is a perfect Jew if he merely observes the laws of the Or HaChaim, because usually only that part of the Shulchan Aruch got into people's hands. A good deal of Yaradea, and even more in Choshen Mishpat and Evan HaEzer, was neglected." I guess in terms of Chorev in two volumes, it's still one book, as opposed to the Shulchan Aruch, which is clearly four different components, four different parts. So Rav Hirsch, he took up the publisher on his offer, and at the age of 28, this was in 1836, he wrote a book called Igros Tzafun, The 19 Letters on Judaism. Now, he wrote the book under a pseudonym of Ben Uziel, and there are different reasons proposed of why he wanted to be anonymous. So, he may have thought that the Sefer was really not so significant, because it was just a trial run for the real book. That's a very non-compelling reason. Perhaps he wasn't concerned for fame. That's another reason I saw people say. But what probably is the most compelling reason is that he didn't want his name to color anyone's opinion about the book. He wanted the person to read the book and to come to their own conclusions. And even by Chorev, he wrote that he would rather not use his name in order that the truth should speak for itself. And Tzafun means, we said it's Igros Tzafun, it means one who's concealed. In other words, the person who's using the pseudonym. Now, the truth is that I'm not sure if I quoted this or have any information in the source notes on this, but there's a big argument if it's Tzafon or Tzafun, and there's actually literature on that. Now, Rav Hirsch, he wrote his 19 letters basically like a modern type of Mor Nevuchim, but it's different in both its form and in its content. And we discussed, and we'll discuss again later, how Rav Hirsch was very against the Rambam's philosophy of Judaism, as he expresses it in the Mor Nevuchim. Again, we said for using outside sources such as Aristotle, and comparing that directly to Torah. But the ideal is the same as the Mora in that he doesn't address the simple-minded believer, meaning a person who is fine with Emuna Pshuta, and he's also not addressing someone who denies Judaism. Rather, in Rabbi Drachman's words, in the Drachman introduction to the 19 letters, he says that he was addressing only the perplexed, quote, to those whose hearts still clung with the warmest attachment to Judaism, but whose minds found much doubtful, incomprehensible, or seemingly useless in the faith endeared to them by a thousand ties. Now, the original subtitle on the cover page read on the 19 letters, "A question to the public concerning the publication of the same author's essays on Israel and its duties." So presumably no one knew who that was because that wasn't published yet. The title page of the book had the inscription from Megillah. This is from Gimel Amud Aleph. It says, "Goli v'yadua lefanecha, shelo lichvodi, v'lo lichvod beis abba, elo lichvodicha, shelo yarbu machlokes b'Yisrael." So this quote comes from Yonasan Ben Uziel. So again, the book was called Ben Uziel. So you see that Refersh obviously had this understatement to say very well thought out. So the point here was that it was supposed to be obvious reading the 19 letters, and Refersh even writes this in the 19 letters, that this is just an introduction to more. And what he was referring to here was to Chorev, which was the larger work, and that a person has to read the 19 letters in that context, that it's leading into this book called Chorev. And when the book was first published, so it had an electrifying effect, and it made an impression on all different types of Jews, and even on some non-Jews who read it. It's very interesting. I came across online a Christian website which was proposing that Christians should study the 19 letters, which I found kind of funny, because I'm not really sure what conclusion a Christian would come from reading the 19 letters. Okay, but we'll leave that to them. So when translated for either the first time or maybe the second time, Professor Drachman in 1899, he said that this work marked an epoch in the history of Judaism in Germany and indeed in the world. And by the way, if anyone wants a free edition of the 19 letters, you could find the Drachman edition online, the entire edition. It's free, and the English is definitely a bit archaic, but the entire book is there, and the introduction is excellent. So these two books together, 19 Letters and Chorev, they contain Rav Hirsch's philosophy on Judaism, Jewish law, and on life in general. And the result was that this was the first time that any book was really defending Judaism in clear High German, that's a Hochdeutsch, and the Reformers, they were put on defense, which hadn't really happened yet. So the question is, so why was it so popular? So it's written in a very engaging style. He has these imaginary letters going back and forth. And right away, in the first letter, he raises burning questions that the youth were grappling with and all of Western Jewry. And although some of these questions might be a little bit dated, most of them, a lot of people, I think, would really connect to today, because we live in a similar society. And in a lot of ways, this book became the definitive work on the essence of Judaism. And he develops a complete understanding of Torah, of human life, happiness, destiny, essence of the Torah, its unique character, right? That he discusses how Torah is not, how Judaism is not a religion, and it's not a theology, but rather that all of man's existence and his individual life and societal life and state life, and he builds all this up in the book. And when you take all this together, then this new understanding leads one to understand that the Torah is the unique message of God addressed to man, which leads to the Torah law, both written and oral, to the Gemara and the role of Rabbanim in interpreting the Torah and in safeguarding it. And he explains that the mitzvot are divine rules for the people of God, and they're divine and they're unbreakable. And when the book came out, it made an enormous impression on the leaders of even of the reform movement. So Avraham Geiger, who Rehersch knew from Bonn, he wrote four papers dealing with the book, and he said that even though the book had a pseudonym, he recognized Rehersch as the author, and he recognized him by, quote, the depth of conviction, the religious fervor and high morality, the clarity of mind, benevolent judgment and original power, by all the invaluable qualities of mind and heart which were manifest in the publication. So also Gratz, that's Heinrich Gratz, he was a historian, somewhat of a phony historian. He wasn't necessarily objective, and Rehersch really rails on him, which was probably difficult for Rehersch because for 3 years he was Rehersch's Talmud. And he writes, Gratz, how the book really moved him so much that it removed him from all the issues that he had with the Gemara. And apparently he changed his mind or he wasn't convinced, and he became one of the leaders of Reform, and he wrote a bunch of history books, one specifically on the oral law, that Rehersch, in the fifth volume of the Collective Writings, he really rips it to pieces in over 190 pages. And I think it's fair to say that since the book was published, this has really been a guide, perhaps the guide, for anyone who wants to know how to deal with the outside world. And the layout is as follows. You have Benjamin. He's an enlightened young man, and he's about to become married, and he expresses to the rabbi, Naftali, all of his doubts about Judaism. And this rabbi is just a few years older than him. And the next 18 letters are written by Naftali, right? So the first letter is written by Benjamin, the following 18 letters are written by the rabbi, Naftali, and the whole thing is fake. And Rehersch, he expresses the problems of the time in the first letter and how to deal with it in all the other letters. Now, Rehersch, he kind of alludes to the fact that he wrote the book. Now, Naftali is compared to a deer, and a tzvi, a hirsch, are all synonymous, because ayol and tzvi, they have the same thing. And another reason for the name might be that Naftali means one who fights the battles of Hashem. Now, they say also that the questioner, this new generation expressed by Benjamin, probably alludes to Yaakov's youngest son, and who's a worry to the father, but a great source of strength and power for the future. So the basic outline of the book, and maybe a short summary, is that Rehersch starts with a complaint from Benjamin, and then he replies in the next bunch of letters. First he discusses what the proper approach to Torah is, then he discusses Hashem and the world. He then discusses specifically man, education, history. Then he discusses the Jewish people and what our purpose is, the founding of the Jewish people, and he goes through Avos and Mitzrayim and the desert, the land, etc. Then he discusses exile. Then Rehersch gets into the classification of the mitzvos, and he gives another reply to the questioner, discusses emancipation, reform, and then eventually this leads up to Chorev. Now, as we pointed out, Rehersch over here was only giving this book to someone who postulated that God exists already. If a person would not believe in God, then you won't get anything out of this book. And Rehersch puts forth that a person has to accept the postulate that God exists. Rehersch discusses that the human race wants to do good. We have these inbuilt morals because we are from God. And he discusses freedom of will that leads to this conflict between good and evil. He discusses how not all of humanity devotes itself to divine law. Actually, I think we would say that most of humanity does not. And the result is confusion. And confusion specifically in what is good and what is evil. And you see in American society, that comes out very strongly. People think that they're doing good, and really they are absolutely pushing evil ideas and evil things that they argue are completely moral. And he says, because of this, we have a need for one nation that's God's people, and that our job is to teach humanity to look for the good, to obey the will of God. And they need us. We need special laws to sanctify ourselves for this purpose and to distinguish us from the rest of humanity as being holy to God. He discusses analysis of the Torah, that each part of the Torah is necessary, either to show the world that good is the ideal of mankind, or to show how Yisrael is the servant of God, and that human authority can never change anything that was given over from the divine. And for Rav Hirsch, it comes out strongly that Torah is axiomatic. It's as true as nature is true, as just as real as the world is, so is Torah. And to doubt the divine origin of the Torah is to put oneself outside of Judaism. Okay, so next time we will look at some of the haskamos, some of the approbations that are written for the 19 letters.